Blog Talk Radio.
And all access
Hi, everybody. I'm Daniel Moglione, and this is another edition of College Football Insiders Radio. I'd like to welcome everybody listening on the Fantasy Sports Channel as well as on All Access Football Radio. We have a packed show for you today. Joining us will be Mr. SEC himself, Charles Davis from SEC Gridiron Live, as well as quarterbacks Max Hall of BYU, Wake Forest head coach Jim Grobe, and our own Super Scout Kelron Sykes will join me later on in the show to talk about this weekend's games. For those of you that haven't signed up yet or haven't downloaded yet College Football Insiders, the newsletter, do so now. Check it out. You can email me at dan@collegefootballinsiders.com or go to nfldraftbible.com and download it directly to your computer right now as you're listening to the show. We have Inside the Nation taking a look at Duke. Do they have a chance to make a bowl? Our on-location report from Rutgers. We take a deep look inside the SEC. We have our top 25, our BCS Busters watch, our FCS watch. Nobody goes that deep into college football like we do. Our player spotlight on Curtis Steele, Memphis running back, who's coming off a 240-yard gain. Interview with Eric Norwood, South Carolina outside linebacker, who's taking on number 2 Alabama this Saturday, as well as our game of the week, USC versus Notre Dame in South Bend, and our fans weekend guide, which sets you off for the weekend. And let's not forget, conference focus on the MAC conference. Dan Lefevre against Tim Hiller. Great, great quarterback matchup. Now, folks, last night in college football, the weekend has already started. For those that you don't know, it starts on Wednesday in college football world. The weekend there's no weekdays anymore in college football. It's all weekend football all the time. Boise, who's ranked 5th in the AP, beat Tulsa 28-21. The big question is that enough? Did they do enough to keep their top 5 ranking? You know, the one way to look at it is, hey, they went to a tough place. Conference USA team that, you know, was 12-0 last year, still a pretty solid club, went on the road, beat them on their home field. Yes, Tulsa hit a couple big plays, but they hit some trick plays. The Boise really beat them straight up. The other way to look at it is, hey, wait a second. Didn't Oklahoma play Tulsa, and then they beat them 45-0? 45-0, 28-21, not exactly comparable scores. So it depends how you look at it. I mean, you ask me, I don't have Boise in the top 5 myself. I have them number 10 in the country. And if, you know, teams like Cincinnati and TCU stay undefeated, keep winning games, I could easily see Boise even falling a spot or two even further in my ranking. So, you know, yeah, they had a great win against Oregon early on. I don't think Oregon played their best game that week. We can't obviously hold that completely against Boise. I think 10 is very, very fair where they are now. It'll be interesting to see that the people, the AP, who had them at number 5, what they thought of that performance last night. It was a chance, standalone game, a chance for Boise to really impress teams, impress the pollsters, I should say, and, you know, leave kind of a lasting impression. They're not going to have many other opportunities. The WAC does not look that strong this year. Nevada, the team that was supposed to be their top challenger, doesn't look that strong. You know, they got blown out by Notre Dame in that opening week, got shut out. So, you know, this might have been their last best chance to really impress people. And even though they came out undefeated and you know, still are 6-0, still don't have a loss on their record, I'm not really sure if they took full opportunity in terms of impressing people and solidifying that top 5 ranking. I mean, listen, people can talk about it all they want. They're not playing in the championship game. Just, you know, you can take that idea right now, throw it out the window. It's not happening. They're not going to the, you know, national championship game. The question is, will they make a BCS bowl? I think that depends on what happens with the other teams. If TCU runs the table, TCU is going to be the team going to a BCS bowl and not Boise. Mark my words, that's going to happen if TCU runs the table. Will they? We don't know. They still have tough games left. They took care of Air Force last week on the road. Not an easy game. They still have to play BYU and Utah. So TCU is far from finished in terms of finishing the season undefeated. But don't forget, that's what happened to Boise last year. They were undefeated, but they did not make it because Utah also went undefeated, and they're the ones that advanced to a BCS bowl game. Now, like I said, you can go to NFLDraftBible.com, download that newsletter right now. You can email me, Dan, at CollegeFootballInsiders.com, and get on the mailing list. You'll get it as soon as it is finished. Also, check out FSC.fm for all you fantasy football fans out there. Coming up, we have interviews with Charles Davis, Max Hall, and Jim Grobe. And if you want to hear more from College Football Insiders Radio, go to blogtalkradio.com/collegefootballinsiders, where we also have one-on-ones with Curtis Steele, running back of Memphis, who's coming off a 240-yard game, all-SEC linebacker Eric Norwood from South Carolina taking on number two Alabama. We have Jacoby Ford, maybe the fastest man in football. Clemson Tiger having a big game this week. He's taking on Wake Forest. We have Wake Forest Jim Grobe, who will be on this show. But, you know, if you want to pass it on to your friends who are Wake Forest fans or ACC fans, they just want to hear the standalone interview, it'll be on College Football Insiders Radio on Blog Talk Radio. We have Chad Spann, one of the 1-2 punch from Northern Illinois, with a top running tandem in the MAC. Also from the MAC, Freddie Barnes, fast Freddie Barnes from Bowling Green, who caught 22 passes last week for over 200 yards. That's right. If you didn't hear it, this kid caught 22 passes. He was on ESPN's First Take yesterday, and he was also on with us here on College Football Insiders Radio. But first off, we're going to start off with Charles Davis and talk some SEC football.
Joining me now from the press box is Charles Davis from SEC Gridiron Live, and he's also the lead analyst for the Fox BCS Bowl Championship Series. Hey, Charles, how's it going today?
Great. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, we're well into the football season. We're starting to get a better feel for, you know, who teams are and what they are. I think particularly last week in the SEC, we had a bunch of games. You know, Alabama taking on Ole Miss, Georgia, Tennessee, Auburn, Arkansas, and, of course, the big one, Florida, LSU. Let's start with the big one, Florida, LSU. What did you take most out of that game?
Well, of course, aside from, you know, will Tim Tebow play or won't he play, and, you know, should he play, and all the drama that went with that, and the young man answered the bell again and performed more than admirably, it was Florida's defense. I think that it's one of the most overlooked deals in talking about Florida, is that you get so hung up on Tebow and their offense and Urban Meyer, and rightly so. They've got the credentials and the, you know, the skins on the wall to do that. But Charlie Strong, the defensive coordinator and his defensive unit, always tends to get short shrift, and I think that we do them a disservice that way. What LSU have in the second half? 44 yards?
did they have that many?
I mean, you know, if they had that many, it sure didn't feel like it. It was just absolutely unbelievable what they got done. And, yes, I know LSU is weak on offense, quote-unquote weak, but Charles Scott's still out there carrying the football. They still were playing at home. They still had everything to play for, and Florida just absolutely throttled them. The game should have been a bigger score disparity. 13-3 was because Florida's offense didn't get enough done, not because Florida's defense didn't give them the opportunities. And that's what constantly gets overlooked in Florida, is how Charlie Strong's defense plays and what a hand they had in winning the national championship. Think about last year's game against Oklahoma. 0 points given up on 2 first and goals inside the 5-yard line. Think about that.
Yeah, they say defense wins championships, and even though they often do get overlooked, I agree with you 100%. I think, you know, a lot of focus was on Florida's management of the game, but it was really the defense that allowed them to play offense the way they did, because LSU basically couldn't move the ball. Let's stick with LSU then. It almost seemed to me as if they were, you know, more worried about Jefferson not making the big mistake than actually trying to move the ball.
Yeah, I think that analysis is pretty spot on. Their biggest thing was not turning the ball over in key situations, not giving Florida short fields to play with. And they were hamstrung, because if they couldn't run the ball effectively with Charles Scott and Keelan Williams and guys, then they had nothing going, because George Jefferson just not really ready to be the full-time guy in terms of throwing the football. You know, Tennessee called a lot of flack about that earlier this year with Jonathan Crompton down at Florida, you know, where everybody said, oh, they don't look like they're trying to win the game.
Right.
You know, what they're trying to do is make sure they don't have the score get out of hand and have the game get out of hand by having someone do something they're not equipped to do. And I felt the same way about LSU on Saturday night. If they go all high, wide, and handsome and throw the football around, that score is probably in the 30s for Florida because mistakes are going to happen, the sacks from the backside where the ball kicks free, the interceptions, you see where I'm going with it.
Yeah, and I think, how about this, Charles, beyond the game and the outcome of that game, do you think in a weird way this might help LSU down the road because Jefferson won't have to deal with that terrible performance, and did they learn something from last year with Lee, how those picks maybe hurt his confidence and hurt his development?
Well, it just hurt them overall as a team. What they have, what, 7 interceptions returned for touchdowns last year?
Something like that, yeah. It was pretty amazing.
Whatever the number was, it was just a crazy number. And yeah, it could help them down the road, but the key now is that he has to, as a quarterback, Jordan Jefferson has to continue to get better and now become a good enough player so the coaches don't have to call the game out of fear.
Right.
But call the game out of, okay, we can go make some plays now. That's the next step for him in order to help his team get better.
And I think they got the weapons in terms of in the passing game with the tight ends and the wide receivers.
Yeah, plenty of people to throw it to. That's not a problem at all. Their thing is they want to make sure that the band's playing for them, not for the other team.
Exactly. Now, you know, having said all this that we have about the Florida Gators and their defense, is it possible they have the second-best defense in the SEC?
Yeah, it is possible because when you watch the Alabama Crimson Tide play defense, you think to yourself, am I going to see a better defensive unit this year anywhere?
It's amazing. They lose the kid Hightower, who's, in my opinion, one of the best linebackers in football and fits their 34 defense to a T, and it's as if, you know, whatever, they just move on.
Yeah, they definitely do that. I mean, the loss of Hightower, you know, now Rolando McClain, you know, who's already there, has just decided to add to his game. You know, he just steps up and is just doing more. So everywhere you look, Alabama comes at you in waves. Doesn't matter. You know, they're fine in the secondary. You got Arenas and his crew. The linebackers we just talked about, the big guys up front with Cody, and they are just so sound and so aggressive to the football. Again, they scored 22 points against Ole Miss, but it felt like they scored 22 just because, well, we don't need any more.
Right.
You know, we're in good shape. This defense is not a real problem. They beat LSU every which way in that ball game. I bet LSU, Ole Miss every which way in that game. And you never once had to feel that Ole Miss had a chance in that game.
Yeah, I got the feeling watching those two games on Saturday that if Ole Miss and LSU had 4 more quarters, they still wouldn't find the end zone.
I agree with that analysis totally. I just don't think either one had any possibility of making that game, you know, making it a night that they were going to remember in terms of winning the football game.
Now, Charles, I've always been a big believer in offensive line and defense winning football, and I think you're probably in agreement with that. At the same time, how much does Georgia miss Matthew Stafford and Knowshon Moreno?
Oh, they miss them terribly. You don't lose guys who are first-round talents in the NFL and often feel like you've gotten better. You know, you may win in a different manner. Your team may come together and play closer as a unit, and that person replacing them may be, you know, nearly as good. But it's rare that you get them where they come in and do that. You know, Tennessee always points out to, hey, you know, we had Peyton Manning all those years, but we won the national championship with Team Martin.
Well, right.
That doesn't mean Team Martin's a better player than Peyton Manning. It just means you found a different way to get it done. You know, Matt Flynn getting it done for LSU didn't mean he's a better player than Jamarcus Russell. But somehow things came together and maybe some other things got involved with it too. So, you know, there's so many ways to look at it, so many ways to get to it. But bottom line for Georgia, they don't have the dynamic quarterback. Joe Cox is a pale imitation of Matthew Stafford. It's not even close. T. Martin to Peyton Manning is much closer a matchup than Joe Cox is to Matthew Stafford. And the guys they have running the football just aren't ready for prime time yet. You know, Caleb King ends up with a broken jaw, so he's down for a while. And Samuels, you know, he's a decent back, but he's not going to, you know, surprise anyone and say, oh, wow, you know, there's the next Knowshon. And the guy wearing Noshon's number, Ealy, is a true freshman. So he's just getting his feet wet, too. So, yeah, there's no doubt that they miss those guys. But up front, they've had their troubles, too.
Yeah, that's been an issue. Staying healthy has been an issue. It seems like at Georgia the last couple of years, they simply haven't been able to throw the same 5 out there on the offensive line week in and week out.
Yeah, that makes things difficult. You know, everybody always wants to get on the coach. That's the first thing.
Of course.
You know, how come we're not blocking anyone? How come we're not doing this? Guess what? You know, if you don't have people who can play together, if you don't have those 5 guys who can become that chorus line or that conga line and dance for you, it's hard. So that's where they are.
And how about your Vols there who won that game against Georgia 45-19? Is Tennessee kind of turning the corner under Kiffin, or do you think this is going to still be an up and down year where we're going to see highs and lows, and you know, one week they're going to look great, another week they're going to, you know, look down?
Well, I think you're going to see some highs and lows just because they're still coming together as a unit and learning what with Coach Kiffin and his staff wants from them. But I think you'll see a lot more highs and lows as they go on. This is a team, if you really think about it, they firmly believe that they let one get away with UCLA. And I think that if you, you know, go back and watch that ball game, it's not a sour grapes thing. You sit there and you wonder how Tennessee did not beat UCLA. What happened that day? To me, they're clearly better than UCLA. Have been for the last two seasons, and both times UCLA has won the football game. Bottom line is, the scoreboard tells your final tale, but it's a teachable moment for Coach Kiffin and his staff about, guys, we can't let one get away that we should be better and we should beat people. The Auburn game, you know, again, they're going to look at that one, and, you know, Auburn's a good football team. But they'll look at that and say, everybody gets on Jonathan Crompton as a quarterback. Go back and watch the Auburn film and see how many times receivers let him down in that game. How many drops they had, didn't make plays they were supposed to make. That didn't happen against Georgia. And look at Jonathan Crompton's final stat line. I'm not nominating Jonathan Crompton for Quarterback Hall of Fame, but I think that he took so much criticism, not all of it his fault. Other people had to step up and take a hand in it too. And after what happened with Auburn, I think that team did that. So I think that Tennessee is tracking upward. You know, when I look at their schedule the rest of the way, the only game that I would look at and say, hey, I'm not sure, I don't think they can win it, would be at Alabama. After that, Tennessee can win or lose just about every game on the schedule. I think they have a non-conference game, maybe Memphis State or someone, that they should win handily. But other than that, it's almost a toss-up each week. But I think that Tennessee's got enough in them. I firmly believe they're a bowl team this year.
All right, and how about that defense? You know, we talk a lot about the offense. How about the defense? Is Mr. Eric Berry the best defensive back in a Tennessee uniform since Mr. Charles Davis roamed the backfield?
Well, you know, they've been a whole lot better player than Charles Davis ever was in the Tennessee secondary. But Eric Berry's as good a defensive back as has ever played at the University of Tennessee. And that says a lot because there have been some really good players that have come out of there. But Eric Berry has to rank right up there with all the greats. And to me, he and Taylor Mays out of USC are the best two safeties in the country. I think bar none, those two are just flat out the two best ones. And, you know, six one way, half dozen another, right? You pick who you think is the better one, but I'm a Tennessee guy, so I guess you figure out who I like
I lean towards Eric Berry a little bit myself because of the ball skills, but yeah, those guys are definitely 1A, 1B when it comes to safeties in college football. You brought up the Auburn Tigers. I think this is the one team that I'm having the toughest time putting my finger on them. 5-0 start, but as you said, could have lost a Tennessee game. Haven't had that toughest schedule. Lost to Arkansas on Saturday. Where do you see this team going in the second half of the season? I mean, I think they could go almost anywhere from 9-3 to, you know, 7-5.
Yeah, I would track them upward again, just because I think that what Gene Chizik has done is taking pretty good hold there. He's a guy that doesn't get you too high or too low. He avoids the peaks and valleys. That's why I really thought they'd win at Arkansas, but Arkansas played really well on Saturday. And if Arkansas tackles as well as they did against Auburn in their other games, they're going to get people fits because Arkansas's offense is really, really good behind Ryan Mallett and Michael Smith at tailback, and they've got guys to fling it out to. So, yeah, I think Arkansas will be one of those teams that will bother people down, you know, as we go along. But Auburn themselves, I think they'll be fine. I really do. I just think that I said earlier that they would have a say in the SEC West, and they will. Like, why? Because look at who they still have to play. They still got to play LSU.
Yep.
They still have to play Alabama. Okay? I believe they play Ole Miss, although I don't think Ole Miss is a factor anymore. I didn't think they were a factor before the season began, and unfortunately for them, they've confirmed it.
All right, and that you lead me to my last question. Ole Miss, I was going to say, what happened to Ole Miss? You know, the dandy, the darling of everybody going into the season.
They weren't my darling. I can just tell you that. And you can check anywhere, and there are a few places you can find it quoted. Never saw it coming. And the reason that I had a few different reasons why, I thought that last year, at the end of the year, was a little bit of a mirage. You know, the upset of Florida was terrific, but that was the same team that lost their very next two games after upsetting Florida.
Sure.
And they got on the roll down the stretch. Well, they're on a roll when there's no division title on the line. It's kind of like how all those teams you see in baseball and pro basketball and, you know, oh, wow, they finished the season on a real uptick. Look at that. They won 12 out of their last 15. You know, they're the Houston Texans. Look, every year, boy, big rush. They finish 8-8. This is going to be the year next year. You know, you're not playing anything on the line. And this is the first time in recent history that Ole Miss has been the hunted, not the hunter. And I was like, how are they going to play with a bullseye on their back? They don't even know how that feels.
Yeah, I like that analogy a lot. You know, a lot of times, you know, in baseball, they say throw out those September numbers.
Yeah, I mean, September numbers. I mean, look at who gets called up in September. I mean, you got guys wearing numbers like 73 and, you know, 94 and, you know, that are playing in the September call-ups, and all of a sudden we're supposed to be seduced into believing it, and we have. You know, as people, we go, oh, wow, they really finished good. Let's get on their bandwagon. No, we probably need to check it a little bit closer. I hate to sound so negative about Ole Miss because they still can have a say in this thing, all right? They still have some key games in front of them, too. You know, they still got to play LSU, right? They still got to play Arkansas, I believe. They still got to play, you know, Auburn. So they've got some, you know, they will have a say in the West. I just don't think it'll be much of a voice.
All right, Charles, thanks a lot for giving us some time and filling us in on the SEC. You can catch Charles on SEC Gridiron Live every week. Check your local Fox Sports schedule to see when they'll be on there. Charles, thanks for giving us some time.
Hey, anytime. You take care of yourself.
You too.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
All right, we're going to keep moving on a fast pace with interviews here. Coming up still, we have quarterback Max Hall of BYU as well as Wake Forest head coach Jim Grove, and we'll be closing out the show with our man Kelron Sykes, Super Scout, previewing this weekend's games. Don't forget to go to NFLDraftBible.com for all your football news and download the College Football Insider's newsletter right now. It's on the homepage. You can download it right now onto your computer. If you want to get it when it's fresh off the presses, ready to go, you can email me at dan@collegefootballinsiders.com, and we will put you on the mailing list, and you will get the PDF as soon as it's ready to go, right off the presses. Also, don't forget to go to blogtalkradio.com/collegefootballinsiders to hear all our one-on-one interviews, as well as twitter.com/CFBinsiders to get any updates from College Football Insiders, NFL Draft Bible. I'm usually there all Saturday long commenting on the big games throughout the day from noon to midnight. And for the fantasy people out there, don't forget FSC.fm. gives you all your fantasy news. Here's Max Hall of BYU.
Welcome to another edition of College Football Insider's Player Spotlight, and joining me today is quarterback Max Hall of the BYU Cougars. Max, how's it going today?
I'm good, man. How are you guys?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, I'm excited. It's football season. We're starting to really get into the heart of it. Almost every team is playing, you know, within their conference right now. Before we get into that, can you reflect a little bit on the season you've had yourself and as well as the team to this point?
You know, it's been a fun season so far. You know, we've had some great wins. We did have the one loss, but for the most part, I love being part of this football team. We have fun. We play hard. I think we're a tight-knit group. We do a lot of different things together, and so we're just having a blast playing right now. Plus, we got a good football team, so I think we're physical. We do a lot of good things up front, and if you keep playing hard, I think a lot of good things will happen to go. But, I mean, I think it's been successful so far.
And, I mean, how big was that opening win against Oklahoma to do it against a team that was ranked number 3 in the country? Many people thought one of the favorites for the national championship. Is there a better way to kick off a season?
I really don't think there is in that type of setting, in that stadium versus that team. For us to go in and to play well and to come out with a win was you know, something that we'll always remember and that we'll always have. So it was a great start to the season, you know, and we just want to keep it going because I think if we keep winning and we can hopefully win a conference championship, it'll make that one, I think, even more special.
And what was that stadium like? I mean, I haven't seen it. You know, obviously I've seen it on TV. Is it as crazy in person as it looks like on TV?
It's nuts, yeah. It's more crazy because you walk in there and it's just so big and there's so many different things going on and different levels of seating and just the smell. I mean, everything is unbelievable. And, you know, once the game got going, yeah, I was able to kind of tune everything out, but you know, every once in a while you did catch yourself on the sideline or something, just kind of looking around going, you know, this is a pretty special moment.
Were you trying to figure out where you could fit that Jumbotron in your dorm room?
Yeah, that was fun. You know, they got a couple pictures of, you know, kind of the field and then with my face up on the Jumbotron. It's kind of cool, man. That thing was huge.
Yeah. So does it have? Is there such a thing as a new stadium smell?
Yeah, absolutely there is. I think there was just a certain kind of a feeling and even smell and just kind of just an overall experience that you have there. So it was something very cool, something I'll always remember.
Now, you also mentioned that, you know, you guys have a pretty tight-knit group and do a lot of things together. Let the listeners in on that a little bit. What do you guys like to do off the field?
You know, we do a bunch of different stuff. I mean, whether it's just it's going out to dinner, we have a lot of fun as a team and team meetings and doing different stuff together. And when we travel on the road, there's stuff going on. And so there's just we're together a lot, obviously, through practice and lifting and doing other stuff. And instead of it just kind of being like a job and us just kind of coming and seeing each other here and that's it, I think we've all kind of bonded together this year more than in the years past that I've been here, and it's just kind of fun to be with the guys, and it makes you play harder, it makes you want to play for your teammates, and again, we're just having fun.
Anyone in particular that you're tight with? I know last year you were pretty close to Austin Colley, who's now off in the NFL.
Yeah, me and Austin were good buds. We still are. I talked to him. You know, he had a good game the other night.
He did.
So I'm happy for him and how he's playing, but, me and Dennis are brother-in-laws, and so we married sisters, and I really could go on with a bunch of guys on the team and name them off, but probably I'm closest with Dennis just because of the connection we have there.
Is that why you like to look for him towards the end of games a lot?
Well, not only that, but also because he's a pretty good tight end. You know, I think he's one of the best in the country, and you want to get that guy the ball.
Yeah, he's not too bad, right? He's got pretty solid hands.
he's a fun guy to throw the ball to. He makes some of my bad passes look good.
And you mentioned seeing Colley there. Do you guys all get together to watch him play when you get a chance on Monday night? You know, have you asked him to compare your throws to Peyton's throws?
Dennis came over Monday night, him and his wife came over, and we watched the game, and then we support Austin, everything that he's doing, and we text him and call him afterwards, and, we're happy for him. So, hopefully one day we'll be playing either with him or against him in the league.
So has Austin told you that, Peyton Manning's got nothing on you?
That's what I told Austin. I said, man, it must be terrible having to go from me to a guy like Peyton.
Tough, right?
It must be a terrible situation for you over there, but it's funny, man. It's fun to see him interact with Peyton and for Peyton to embrace him in that offense and to use him and to get him the ball. He saw him score 2 touchdowns the other night. So, again, man, I can't be more happy for Austin. What are you doing right now?
All right, we're talking to Max Hall, senior quarterback of the BYU Cougars. They are 5-1 on the season. He's thrown for 1,723 yards, 13 touchdowns, completing almost 70% of his passes. Max, tell us a little bit about this week's game. You guys go on the road to play San Diego State, looking to roll off win number 4 following that loss to Florida State.
Yeah, I think we're excited to go play in San Diego. You know, obviously playing in that stadium is going to be another cool experience. I played that once before, and it was a blast. So, San Diego State has got a better team this year. I think defensively they're really good. Coach Long does a really good job with those guys, and they've had 2 weeks to prepare for us with a bye week. So I think they're going to give us everything that we can handle. But I think we're playing well right now. I think our defense is playing well. And I think if we just execute and manage the game right, we're pretty tough to stop. So I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a good challenge for us, and I know San Diego State is looking forward to the game as well.
All right, and then, we don't want to get too much ahead of things, but let me pick your brain a little bit on a big-time Mountain West defender, Jerry Hughes. What can you tell us about him?
Man, he's just a good player, and he's somebody that you have to know where he is all the time. You have to kind of keep one eye on him and the other eye on everybody else. So we may have to do a few things to kind of go around him or whatever. So, but anytime you play a player like that, it's just he reminds me a lot of the defensive lineman from Oklahoma. It's just one of those guys where you always got to know where he is and you always got to pay attention to what's going on around you. So we got to prepare for him. He's a good player.
Now, I'm sure you and the rest of the Mountain West quarterbacks must scratch your head when you hear that he used to be a running back coming out of high school. It's like, why did they switch him to defense?
Yeah, no kidding. Obviously, he's doing well there. So I think it was a good switch for him. But, he's just a good athlete, and to have him play in the position he's at and the success he's having is pretty sweet for him.
Now, you know, everybody knows that there's kind of like that big three in the Mountain West, but you guys, Utah, your in-state rival, as well as TCU, how do you kind of this week prevent yourself from not looking past San Diego State ahead to TCU? Are you guys doing anything in particular to make sure you don't look past your next opponent?
Well, we always tell ourselves you got to take it one game at a time. You always tell yourself that every game counts, and it really does count right now in the conference. You know, one loss can determine the conference championship, and so San Diego State, this is a big game for them, and if they can win this game, I think it's, you know, it kind of will make their season almost. So we know we got TCU the following week. We know that's a big game, but if we don't take care of business like we do with San Diego State, it's going to hurt us. So if we can come out and execute and play well and be on top of our game versus San Diego State, I think we can build momentum and, you know, have a good game following versus TCU.
All right, Max, before we let you go, we close things out with the segment we call Three and Out. Three quick questions for you. Since you're an offensive guy, maybe I should say three and a score, not three and out. First down, who's your favorite quarterback? All time.
All time? Oh, man, you're killing me. How about I just do my favorite one right now?
All right, that's fair enough.
My favorite quarterback playing right now that I love watching is Tom Brady.
All right, second down, favorite non-football player athlete?
I always loved Michael Jordan. I mean, every time I see him on TV or an old game or something, I gotta watch it, so MJ.
All right, third down, anything in particular that you do on game day, you know, kind of a superstition or to get ready for a game?
I don't really have any superstition. I'm trying to think of something for you. I don't really have one. I kind of used to in high school, like I'd eat the same thing or I'd kind of do the same thing or watch the same show or whatever for the game. In college, I really don't. It's kind of different every week, so I don't really have it. I'm not a superstitious guy anymore.
All right, fair enough. Max, thanks a lot for joining us and giving us some time. Wish you luck this Saturday.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
Anytime.
All right, we're going to keep it moving on here with Wake Forest head coach Jim Grobe. He's going to talk a little bit about, you know, building the program, how he has guys like Aaron Curry and Alfonso Smith going to Wake Forest, what that has meant for the program, as well as where the team is going moving forward, and, you know, who the NFL scouts are looking at now at Wake Forest, which Demon Deacons are the players to keep an eye on, guys like Brandon G, their corner, defensive lineman Boo Robinson, the progress of quarterback Riley Skinner.
Joining us now in this College Football Insider's Coach's Corner is head man Jim Grobe of Wake Forest. Coach Grobe was the winner of the Bobby Dodd Coach of the Year Award in 2006 and comes into this Saturday's game against Clemson with an overall record of 91-79-1 and a 58-46 mark in 8-plus seasons at Wake Forest, which includes the most 8-win seasons, bowl appearances, and bowl victories in school histories. If you were to say this is the best 8-year stretch in school history, not many would argue with you. This season, the Deacons are 4-2 and 2-1 in ACC play, which has them atop the ACC Atlantic Division. Hi, Coach. How you doing today?
Good, Daniel. Thank you.
Let me ask you. Let's start here. You know, you have a degree in education. How much of your job is teaching?
Well, that's what coaching is. You know, I think when you grow up and you take those teacher education classes, you find out, you know, pretty quick, you know, coaching is teaching, and you're just moving your classroom out onto the field. You know, we actually do some inside work. You know, we do some board work, and we show some video to the kids. But, you know, a lot of our job is teaching out on the field, but that's all it is. If you're going to be a good football coach, you better be a good teacher.
And did you have that in mind way back then?
You know, I always thought I was going to be a player. I was dumb to figure out if I was big enough to play at the next level. I wish I was where I am right now, and the NFL people were coming in and telling me it was time for me to hang it up as a player. You know, that's just how much I love playing the game. And when I found out that, you know, probably playing at the next level wasn't in my future, then the only way I could think to be a kid the rest of my life was to get into coaching.
That sounds like it's worked out, though, pretty well.
Well, I've been blessed. I've been fortunate. I had an opportunity to work with a lot of great coaches, both as head coaches and assistant coaches. Had an opportunity to get a head coaching job after I'd spent some time as an assistant. I think I was 43 years old when I got my first head coaching job at Ohio University. And then I was blessed to have been able to bring in some really good assistant coaches that have really made my career successful. So I think you know, most head coaches that have won a few games will tell you that they would never be successful without a great assistant coaching staff, and that's what I've had at Ohio University and now here at Wake Forest.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about that success. I mean, there have been several coaches that have done well at other places that didn't fare so well at Wake Forest. What has allowed you to succeed there where others haven't?
Well, I think, you know, my staff is number one, you know, having a good coaching staff. I don't think there's any question. And I think the other thing is, you know, not focusing on the negatives. I think too many times when you go into programs that have been down, that have needed help, we were that way at Ohio University, we were that way here at Wake Forest. I think too many times you go in and you worry about what you don't have, whether it be players, facilities, finances, whatever, and you don't get your eye on the target. And I think what we've been able to do, and again, I you know, give all the credit in the world to my assistant coaches, but what we've been able to do is just come in and teach blocking and tackling, you know, worry about coaching football, recruit the best kids we could find, and that meant best character kids first, and then kids that we thought could play in first the Mid-American Conference at Ohio University and then ACC here at Wake Forest. But I think more than anything else, when you're trying to get a program that's been down jump started, you can't dwell on what you don't have. You got to look at the positives and what you do have, and just go forward. And that's what we've done a pretty good job of, I think.
You talk about character players. Are there any characteristics or criteria that you specifically look for when recruiting? When people think of a Jim Grove player, what should we think of?
Well, I think you know, the kids that we're looking for are self starters. You know, guys that you know, they may not be the top student at the school or in their class, but they're kids that are at school every day. They're working hard. They want a college degree. They're basically college bound kids. And they're kids that are self starters. You got to run them out of the weight room. You got to run them off the practice field. They're always wanting to come in and watch extra film and things like that. And we basically find that out from the coaches and the principals and the teachers and counselors of the schools we go in. You know, typically what we found, if we hear anything negative, we're pretty much off of a kid. And I'm talking about things like laziness, missing too many days of school, you know, doesn't really like to practice, doesn't really like to lift weights, things like that. No matter how good a player is, part of our job at Wake Forest is to develop players. And so what we feel like, we can't develop a player to the best of his ability if he's not a self-starter. So we're kind of, you know, when we talk about character, we're talking about all those attributes. You know, certainly the first thing you think about with character is, you know, you're not out robbing banks and stuff, and that's certainly, you know, something that we want to make sure of, that our kids have that kind of character. But also you need winning-type characteristics, you know, really good work ethic, you know, guys that love the game, guys that are willing to go the extra mile, all those type things make a Wake Forest football player have a chance to win on Saturday, because typically we're not getting the four-star, you know, recruits sometimes as far as their football ability, but we're trying to find four-star kids.
And we're talking to head man Jim Grobe of the Wake Forest Demon Deacons in this College Football Insiders Coach's Corner. Coach, a couple of guys that had a lot of character and were pretty darn good football players on the field, Aaron Curry, Alfonso Smith. You know, Curry went fourth overall. Smith went in the second round. Two of four players you had on the defensive side of the ball go in the first four rounds. What does that kind of publicity do for the program, having that kind of exposure on NFL Draft Day?
Well, I think we're going to find out going forward, Daniel, to be honest with you. I think it's going to be great for us. I think when we first got to Wake Forest, you know, we could recruit the school because we had a great academic program, and everybody knew that a Wake Forest degree would be good. Not only the players knew that, but their parents knew that. But, you know, we had a little trouble selling football, to be honest with you. You know, we had to show kids that we could win, and we started doing that. And then we had to show kids that we could go to bowl games, and we started doing that. And the next piece to the puzzle is we needed to show kids that we could compete for championships. And after we won an ACC championship, we didn't have to fight that fight anymore. And I think the next step was the NFL. I think, you know, kids, we're being told by some other programs that if you go to Wake Forest, you're not going to have as good a chance to play in the National Football League. And, of course, no matter where you play, if you're a good player, the National Football League's going to find you. But, you know, we have two or three NFL scouts in nearly every day here at Wake Forest. They, you know, watch film all day. They go to practice. They have an open door to get out on the field and get right in the drills and watch the kids and be around them. So our kids are not going to be missed. And you made the point that last year we had four kids go in the top four rounds, and then we had three free agents out of that class. And one of the kids that was actually in that class was Jeremy Thompson. But Jeremy Thompson was a defensive end who's now playing for the Green Bay Packers. He was drafted in the fourth round, but we didn't have an opportunity to redshirt Jeremy. He actually played for us as a true freshman, so you could actually throw Jeremy Thompson in that same group. He came in with Curry and Arnoux and Alfonso and Chip Vaughn and all those guys. So we really had a good class, and now there really aren't any. There's nothing really that we have to fight anymore. You know, now we've proven we can go to bowl games, we can compete for championships and win championships. And if you're a guy that's really excited about the opportunity to not only get a great education but have a chance to go play at the next level, you know you can do that now at Wake Forest.
Now you mentioned, Coach, that you got NFL scouts coming in there pretty much every day. Which current Demon Deacons are generating the most buzz among those NFL scouts?
Well, you know, I think we've got a football team this year, Daniel, that we don't have an Aaron Curry right now. We don't have an Alfonso Smith. We don't really have a kid right now that I think you would look at and say, that guy's a no-brainer, slam dunk, next-level guy. But I do think we've got five or six kids on this football team that have a chance to get drafted. A big part for them is going to be how well they play down the stretch. I think, you know, most of our kids are starting to play a little bit better right now. I think, you know, some of the kids are generating some interest from these NFL teams. But I think a lot of them are wait and see, and I'm not sure that's not true for most programs. You know, there are some kids in the country, I'm sure, that are at the top of everybody's list, guys like Tim Tebow and guys like that. But I think from what I gather from scouts, you know, there are so many kids that they're looking at right now that a big part of who they're going to really consider drafting will be based on how well the kids play here down the stretch in these last six or seven games.
All right, let me ask you about a couple of guys that are on my radar a little bit. How about Boo Robinson? What kind of impact does he bring on the defensive line, and how does he make everyone around him a little better?
Well, Boo's very athletic. For a 300-pound guy, he's very athletic. Boo's biggest problem is, you know, back in the springtime, he had problems with his back. He had a bulging disc, and that's since gone back in, and that's all fine now. But he's been slowed in the weight room. You know, one of the things that Boo had going for him was he's a pretty strong guy, and he's starting to catch up a little bit now. About halfway through the season now, he's working a little better in the weight room. He's getting a little bit stronger. He's starting to play a little bit better. But for a 300-pound guy, the nice thing about Boo Robinson is he's capable of getting off blocks and really playing sideline to sideline, and that's unusual for a big guy.
And how about your corner, Brandon Gee, who I think is one of the better corners in the country?
Well, he's getting a lot of interest from the scouts. The nice thing about Brandon is he's got the really good frame. You know, he's a taller guy for a corner. He's a really strong physical corner, and he's one of the fastest guys on our football team. You know, one of the ways we've improved at Wake Forest is we have gotten better foot speed, and Brandon Gee's one of our faster guys right now. And he's starting to play better. I thought he really picked up his game a couple weeks ago against North Carolina State. This past weekend had a really good game against Maryland, and so I think he's a guy, he's one of those guys we were talking about that's really starting to hit stride here the last part of the season. So I think he's a guy that the scouts are interested in, and he certainly has all the tools. I'd like to see, you know, continue to improve, especially in his ball hawking ability. You know, Brandon's always been a physical kid that'll hit you, a good tackler, and really, really fast, a good cover guy. And I'd like to see him develop some of those skills that Alfonso had and start taking the ball away from some people here toward the end of the year.
and finding the end zone after he takes the ball away, right?
That would be okay with me. I don't think any of the coaches would be disappointed with that.
And how about on the other side of the ball? You know, your quarterback, Riley Skinner, four-year starter there. He's on pace for career highs pretty much across the board, and I believe he's already reached a career high with 15 touchdown passes. Talk about his development from that freshman season when you guys went to the Orange Bowl till today.
Well, you know, Riley's job when he was a freshman was not to screw things up. I mean, that's really, you know, you got a redshirt freshman quarterback. Your real thought there is just, you know, don't make the mistakes that are going to get us beat. And, of course, he took us to an ACC championship as a redshirt freshman. We were probably in that mode a little bit when Riley was a sophomore. Again, you know, not want to turn the ball over. We won 9 games when he was a sophomore and won our bowl game. And then last year we put a little bit more on Riley. We did a little bit more spread stuff. We tried to throw the ball a little bit more. Probably hurt us early in the year when we got back to being a little bit more run, pass, balanced. We got better at the end of the year. But we put more on him last year. The problem was, you know, we were banged up a lot last year, and a lot of his supporting cast was either playing hurt or they were missing games from time to time, and we just didn't have very good offensive production as a junior. This year as a senior, we've really kind of hung it on him. He's getting better help out of his supporting cast, but we know that Riley Skinner's got to play well for us to win, and so he's doing some really, really good things. He's broken most of our school records, maybe all of our school records for quarterbacks right now. So from here on out, it's not about you know, trying to prove anything. It's just trying to scratch out enough wins to have a good season.
All right, Coach, thanks a lot for joining us and giving us some time. That was Coach Jim Grobe, head man at the Wake Forest, the Demon Deacons. They're taking on the Clemson Tigers this Saturday at noon. Big ACC clash. Coach, thanks for giving us some time.
Enjoyed it, Daniel. Thanks for putting us on.
Anytime, Coach.
All right, buddy.
All right, if you're just joining us now, earlier on in the show, we had Charles Davis from SEC Gridiron Live breaking down pretty much the entire SEC. I think we touched upon at least 8 or 9 teams out of the 12 in the conference, and obviously the key 8 or 9 teams in that conference. That was Jim Grobe, who was just on with us, head man from Wake Forest. We also had quarterback Max Hall from BYU. If you want to catch any of those interviews, you can go to blogtalkradio.com/collegefootballinsiders. Also this week, we've spoken to running back Curtis Steele of Memphis, outside linebacker Eric Norwood from South Carolina, wide receiver Jacoby Ford of Clemson, Chad Spann, running back from Northern Illinois, and Fast Freddie Barnes of Bowling Green, who had 22 catches on Saturday. He was on with us as well. Also, don't forget, go to twitter.com/CFB Insiders for all our updates, College Football Insiders, NFL Draft Bible, as well as, you know, tidbits here and there on games, noon to midnight every Saturday. Check that out on Twitter, fsc.fm, for all your fantasy news. And with us now is Kelron Sykes, our Super Scout, to talk about this week's games. Kelron?
Hey, Daniel, what's going on?
How's it going, man? How's everything?
Everything is good. Looking forward to a great weekend of college football.
All right, where should we start? You know, there's two games that you can go either way as being the big game. If you could only watch one of these games, would you tune into USC going to South Bend, or are you more of a Red River rivalry guy?
Well, last year, I know during this time, I kind of was looking forward to the SC Notre Dame matchup, but definitely this year I'm going for shooting for that Texas OU matchup this week. Two juggernauts that's going to battle this weekend, and it's going to be a great game to see.
All right, let's start there then. You know, I think the biggest story when these two teams have faced the last couple of years has been the play of the quarterbacks. Sam Bradford won the Heisman last year. Colt McCoy finished second. You know, a lot of discussion between, you know, those two teams. Did Oklahoma deserve to make where they did? Did Sam Bradford deserve to beat out McCoy? What's your take on those two guys?
Well, those two guys are obviously the two top quarterbacks heading into this season. Unfortunately, Bradford, you know, sustained that injury during the early parts of the season. But nevertheless, expect a shootout this weekend. You know, both those guys are going to – they're great competitors, first and foremost. And they're going to push each other and challenge each other on both sides of the ball, and it's going to be interesting to see I would like to see Sam Bradford come out and establish a deep threat, you know, first and foremost, you know, before they start getting those running backs involved, Chris Brown and DeMarco Murray. But, you know, on the other hand, you know, McCoy and, you know, that receiver they have over there, Shipley, is that's an amazing combo. So it's going to be an interesting game this weekend. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think that's one of the best combinations in college football in terms of a quarterback to receiver tandem. I believe they're roommates as well and good buddies, so that kind of adds to the chemistry. I'm really curious to see how often Dominique Franks, OU's top corner, lines up with Shipley and how that matchup goes. And you brought up the running game. I mean, I believe the last 10 years, the team that's run the ball better has actually won this game.
Yes, that's definitely true. It's going to be an interesting matchup in terms of what UT's O-line can do. I mean, they haven't really been tested this year. I believe they've given up 3 sacks all season. So it's going to be interesting to see what that front four, you know, McCoy and DeMarco Granger, and those other defensive linemen can do versus that UT offensive line.
Yeah, I think we're going to learn a lot about both of these teams. You know, Oklahoma as well, the two toughest teams they've played so far, they've lost to, although it's been by 1 point and obviously without Bradford. So now they're getting closer to being 100%, still without Gresham, the star tight end. He's out for the year, although I hear Broyles might play. So if he does, that gives them another weapon in the passing attack. You know, we're going into this game with question marks, so it's kind of hard to pick the winner. Texas is obviously the favorite, undefeated. Which way are you leaning in this game?
Definitely OU this week. I expect a 90%, I would say 90%, 95% healthy Sam Bradford going into this weekend. But that defense of OU, I expect them fully to come out, you know, with their horns down and coming after UT. And it's going to be a great game.
So we're looking for an upside-down hook'em horns on Saturday in Dallas in the Red River rivalry. Always a fun game to watch. You got half the field wearing OU colors, half the stadium wearing Texas colors. Really a unique college football experience. Let's move on to that other big game, Notre Dame against USC. Let's start with Notre Dame having the ball. Does Jimmy Clausen have enough to pull off the upset here? How does he, as well as Golden Tate and Rudolph the tight end, how does that passing attack match up against this USC defense?
Well, let's start off first and foremost. I mean, Pete Carroll, I believe, is undefeated, you know, coming off bye weeks. So that right there is key number one. Second key, can that Notre Dame offensive line sustain, you know, pass protect well against that, you know, dreaded front eight of USC? And with that being said, it's going to be interesting to see what Clausen can do, you know, taking second and long and third and long, because I believe SC will establish themselves in stopping the run this weekend, first and foremost. And it's going to be interesting to see what kind of matchups, you know, SC creates versus Tate and that tight end as well. So, you know, I fully expect, you know, a good matchup this weekend, but nevertheless, I cannot go against the Trojans coming off a bye week.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a good point, and they've won 7 in a row now against Notre Dame. Kellen, if USC comes in there and just runs all over Notre Dame, just beats them up, you know, what does this mean for the Charlie Rice Weiss era at Notre Dame? Do you think his job could be on the line if they don't put up at least a good performance?
You know, that's such a tough job, you know, he has down there. I mean, as you expect, and I predicted Notre Dame to win 9 games this year, but with the question mark of Charlie Weiss, you know, returning for the 2010 season, that's still in question. You know, that's, historically speaking, that's job number one. It's first and foremost to win national championships at Notre Dame. That's why they hired coaches. You know, that's why they brought Lou Holtz in there. You know, that's why they brought Weiss in there. But unfortunately, just because of, you know, lack of talent, you know, from a historical standpoint, within the last maybe 5 years or so, Notre Dame hasn't really matched up, you know, with the SCs, and they've lost some crucial games versus Stanford here and Purdue there. So, you know, the question mark is, you know, can Notre Dame win the big game? And we'll see this weekend. But unfortunately, like I said, with that bye week, with SC coming off that bye week, and SC just so loaded, you know, and they're so deep and so talented and so well coached, it's going to be hard to beat the Trojans. I mean, my gosh, I mean, this is a time of season where, you know, SC typically starts to roll. And a good thing for them, they had their early loss this season. And I fully expect them to go in there, establish a run, and start going vertical to Damian Williams and see Joe McKnight just explode this weekend.
So do you think they're going to open it up a little bit? I mean, they still have the true freshman at quarterback, Matt Barkley. He already has road wins at Ohio State, another big road win in conference against Cal. Are they still going to kind of baby him a little bit and have him manage the team? Or do you think they're going to open it up a little more and try to be more explosive? And they're also returning Ronald Johnson, their big play wide receiver. He should be playing for the first time this Saturday.
Yeah, well, let's go back from a historical standpoint. Pete Carroll has done the same thing, you know, with Booty and with Sanchez during a bye week or during a crucial time in the mid part of the season. You know, he's opened up that offense. I mean, you know, this guy is facing first rounders on defense every day on the scout team, and those guys are, you know, unfortunately aren't making a travel squad. He's still facing top tier talent just, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday during practice. So I think it's that time. The season is that time of the year for them to start putting up that offense, start establishing themselves, and start putting themselves in the national championship picture. So I fully expect them to come out, you know, all weapons and exploding on Notre Dame this weekend.
I think a really interesting matchup that hasn't gotten a lot of attention for this Saturday is Virginia Tech against Georgia Tech. It seems like to me a lot of people are already handing Virginia Tech the conference title and almost assuming they're going to win every game from here on out. If you ask me, I think they're going to have some trouble this week against Georgia Tech. I know it's easy to point to say, wait a second, didn't Miami blow out Georgia Tech and didn't Virginia Tech blow out Miami? Therefore, Virginia Tech should blow out Georgia Tech. But, you know, as we know, we've seen this all, you know, all too often. That's not always the way it works out. You can't always look at common opponent and expect that's what's going to happen. A lot of times it's about matchups. I think going down there to Atlanta isn't going to be easy for the Hokies.
You're right, especially dealing with that option offense. And, you know, Jonathan Dwyer is probably the second best running back in the country, and it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how Virginia Tech defends that offense. You know, and from a defensive perspective, Virginia Tech, obviously, I would say arguably right now, has the best defensive end in the country, and Derek Morgan right now. He's playing phenomenal this season, and it's going to be interesting to see how they contain him coming off to the edge and him putting pressure on Tyrod Taylor this weekend.
Yeah, Mr. Derek Morgan, CFI Player Spotlight interview from last week. He was our one-on-one in last week's College Football Insiders newsletter. Yeah, he's definitely one of the top defensive ends in the country. And I know, you know, Virginia Tech has a pretty good defensive end, too, in Jason Worlds, but I'm sure he's not looking forward to going against that option.
You know, expect a lot of cut blocks and a lot of down blocks and chopping at the knees and the ankles. Defending that option is ugly because that's pretty much what that front offensive lineman is going to do. They're going to cut at those knees, and most defensive linemen and linebackers absolutely hate that block. That is the worst block in the world. You know, being a former linebacker myself, you know, that's one thing you hated was a guy's helmet and shoulder pads going right for your kneecap. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what kind of demeanor, you know, Virginia Tech has going to the second and third quarter, you know, once Georgia Tech starts to establish that offense, starts to establish that run game.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess you're telling us that they don't protect the linebackers the same way they protect, you know, the Tom Brady's and the Peyton Manning's, huh?
Oh, no. Big money guys like Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, no, sir.
I mean, you can't even look at those guys' knees. The referee's going to throw a flag at you.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
But before we let you go, we got about a minute or so left. Quickly, an interesting matchup. I saw a lot of progress from Ryan Mallett last week against Auburn. Does he have any chance to make some noise against that unbelievable Florida defense?
Negative. Homecoming from Florida, Florida big, maybe four touchdowns plus.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. No, I just, you know, with Tim Tebow coming back from last week, and, you know, Florida really didn't open up the offense because they really didn't have to because LSU really didn't present a challenge to them offensively. And I think, you know, Tebow's last homecoming game, I mean, it might get ugly there. In Gainesville.
Yeah, I'm just anxious to see how the quarterback does. Like I said, you know, he had that really tough game against Alabama, and he's kind of gotten better the last couple weeks, but now all of a sudden you're facing that really, really tough defense again. I mean, you know, it's a toss-up as to which team has the better defense, Florida or Alabama. It'll be interesting to see how he does. Kelron, thanks a lot for joining us, and hopefully we'll hear from you again next week.
Daniel, thank you. Talk to you soon.
All right, that's Kelron Sykes, our super scout. He's done it all, played college football, played at the professional level, coached, scouted most recently with the St. Louis Rams. He can do it all, and he joins us every Thursday here on College Football Insiders Radio. And also, don't forget to go to blogtalkradio.com/collegefootballinsiders. to check out all our interviews. That's Curtis Steele, Charles Davis, Eric Norwood, Jacoby Ford, Chad Spann, Fast Freddy Barnes, Max Hall, Jim Grove, Player Spotlights, From the Press Box, Coach's Corners. Also go to twitter.com/CFBInsiders, NFL Draft Bible to download the newsletter, and of course, FSC.FM.